adults of the last four generations have blessed our children with the destiny of a shorter lifespan than their own parents. Your child will live a life 10 years younger than you because of the landscape of food that we've built around them. Two-thirds of this room today in America are statistically overweight or obese. You lot, you're all right, but we'll get you eventually, don't worry. Right? The statistics of bad health are clear, very clear. We spend our lives being paranoid about death, murder, homicide, you name it, it's on the front page of every paper, CNN. Look at homicide at the bottom, for God's sake. Right? Every single one of those ones in the red is a diet-related disease. Any doctor, any specialist will tell you that. Fact. Diet-related disease is the biggest killer in the United States right now, here today.
And we're live. Sort of. You're probably not listening to us live right now. I'm Kevin Sullivan. This is the Wait What If podcast. And today we have tonight we have a special guest who's actually turning red right now. I don't want to make her too nervous. Victoria Brookbank. I always try to say your maiden name, but I'm no way I'm going to figure that one out. How do you say your maiden name?
Albarracín.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not going to say that one. Is it hyphenated or is it?
Yes.
It is?
Yes.
So you're Victoria.
Albarracín Brookbank.
Okay, yeah. Victoria is our, there's a club here where there's a bunch of women that have their doctorates and husbands who don't. So they're the smart ones. My wife is part of that club. So is Josh and Amy down the road. Her degree is in soil science and biogeochemistry from UC Davis. Let me just bring this music down. And I played that little clip of Jamie Oliver. Have you ever seen his television show?
Yeah, I love it.
He goes to that town. Mm-hmm. And it's the most unhealthy town in America, in Virginia. Mm-hmm. And he decides that he's going to show them what healthy eating is and healthy cooking it is. So he gets on their radio stations and invites the people to come down. And it's actually a pretty good show. I got addicted to it till I stopped watching it, I think, towards the end. But so I don't know if he was successful.
Yeah, I like it. And I thought that his approach to school menus was really, really, really good. And it was sad to see how much resistance he got from mm-hmm. the school system itself.
Yeah, from the lunch ladies. Weren't mm-hmm. they really upset with him?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's just sad. But
so, go ahead.
I think his initiative is fantastic.
Sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I had you on because specifically my wife and I go over and visit, and you always have these fantastic meals laid out with all these fresh ingredients. We don't see the box stuff that we're guilty of using. Everyone's guilty of using it. And we'll kind of go into that. We'll go into the historically why I feel like we do that. And then where that's going to lead us, and then hopefully you can chime in and give us your thoughts about, what that means for society and what that means for our future.
Yeah, I'll try my best.
So I think, and I'm not sure if I made clear at the beginning of this, this is our fourth podcast, why I call it the Wait What If. A couple of people asked me this weekend. I call it the Wait What If, because we're sitting around in your driveway. You always mm-hmm. seem to have fires in your driveway, very North Carolina style. And we're always contemplating stuff. And it's more like the conversation sort of goes, wait, what if we, and then we would go into something and then we end up talking for hours.
Yes.
And that's kind of where I wanted to go with this thing. So that's why it's called the Wait What If podcast. And we're covering everything. Last week we had Paul on here. You said you haven't had a chance to listen yet. It was very, very in-depth. I'm still emailing him with questions. And it's like diving into a really deep quarry, and I'm just jumping off the cliff. It's hard to, he's very smart and he's got a lot of literature to back him up. And mm-hmm. I have a lot of, Facebook updates that's where I get most of my information from. So, all right. So Let's start with, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on what he said, what Jamie Oliver said there?
I do agree. I mean, this is a big, big problem for the United States that there's so many obese people around. And this doesn't only resonate and, you know, people at the family level dying and, you know, having problems and having legs amputated because of diabetes or having problem. Well, you're a PA, so you know better the health consequences.
But oh, yeah, I see it every day.
It also resonates at the societal level where you have an increased cost of healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obesity and the diseases that are related to obesity are the main cost of healthcare.
Sure, absolutely.
So,
if you got rid of obesity, no kidding, 50% of all hospitals would shut down.
And that'd be fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
not for the people who work for the hospital system, but just because we wouldn't need that much care. And the ramifications of, you know, the diseases that you get because of obesity are tremendous.
Sure.
I just can't understand how people do not address them earlier.
It's a hard thing, because addressing it with patients and addressing it with anyone, it's an embarrassment. People feel like it is a weakness versus a health issue.
Yes.
And it's still taken that way as society as a whole, that it's a weakness. To some extent, I guess it could be, just as much as having a bad knee is a weakness. I mean, it's a weak spot in your body. But it's also, it's this weird reflection on where we are in society, where we have so much abundance, food, high calorie foods are everywhere. And we just are genetically predisposed to consume those.
Right.
If it's sweet, if it tastes good, if it's red, especially, you know, different bright colors, our body's designed to crave it because we get that sugar in ourselves and pump up our two things. We pump up our fat stores, which is energy stores, and we give ourselves energy for the moment in case a bear jumps out of the woods.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, 100,000 years later.
It's necessary, but.
Yeah, well, 100,000 years later, the stress isn't a bear, the stress is work, family.
Right.
And it triggers this cortisol response. It triggers a response to want to eat. And unfortunately, we're not burning it. We're just storing it. There's no feast and famine. It's just feast right now.
Right. And the people who discover MSG, they really know about our...
Is that like a preservative or...
No, MSG is a substance that increases the ability of you to taste food. So it's like a taste amplifier.
Okay.
So.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yes.
So it takes something bland and makes it really, really tasty.
Exactly.
Okay. What do you think, and before I go into the U.S. perspective of this, do you think that Argentina and, let's just use Argentina. Do you think that's facing a similar problem that the U.S. is facing?
Yes, actually it is. And I've noticed it. You know, like I go back home every year, or I try to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a little bit more difficult with children and, you know, a complicated lifestyle. But yes, I've noticed a huge change. I left 12 years ago, and the last time I was there, I noticed that people are getting overweight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like before you used to look at, you know, any street in Argentina and you would see people that were trim and, you know, in general, you know, we have a more petite build, and now I see a lot of obesity, a lot of obesity. And even more so, you see a lot of hyper-obesity, which...
greater than, we would say greater than like 35 on the BMI index.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yes.
Really, really high. Morbid obesity is what we call it.
Yes, you don't see... Yes, you see a lot of really big people walking around.
And what, again, it becomes a social thing. We use, and I always sit with my patients and I bring them out. The first time they come in, they say, I want to lose weight. And I take them out and I show them the BMI chart. There's science that's good about the BMI chart, bad about the BMI, whatever. I use it as a good index because I say, all right, you know, I can tell you you're overweight. We hear that in society and we say, oh, I'm overweight. You're insulting me. You're not insulting them. You're saying this is a
fact.
Yeah.
This is how your body composition is.
And you're familiar with the bell curve.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're overweight, you fall on the bell curve. You have outliers on either side where either you're overweight, you're not going to have problems, the 2.5% on one side of the bell curve. And on the other side, you're going to be overweight and what would be the other side of that? Have problems, or not be overweight and have problems. But in the middle, you're going to be overweight and you're going to at least start to have problems. And then I show them that 30 plus is obese, and I make them say it. So they'll say, okay, that says I'm obese. And you say, again, they take it as an insult. And you're like, it's not an insult. It's just a way that we can stratify you and say, you know, this is where you are and this is what your risks are for the next 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, hopefully 20 years. And then when you get to the morbid obese, and unfortunately we're seeing a lot of people, to me, it's common to see folks between, overweight is pretty much normal. Obese is what I just see the majority of the people come in, and then morbid obesity is kind of down. I mean, that's when people are really sick. So yeah, it's just, it is an epidemic. And over the next 10 years, it's what he said there at the beginning was absolutely true. People, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. So you watch TV, they tell us about murder. They tell us about Ebola outbreaks. They tell us about all that because it's frightening. But I think I just read it was like 40% of American population is going to have diabetes. 40, that's almost half the people.
It's insane. It's just a very scary concept. And I mean, like, if you really gave the facts of diabetes and the consequences of diabetes to people, I would be scared to death to run into that path. So I would do something to prevent it right away. And if I and my children, I would never want them to pick up the unhealthy habits that could lead them to get diabetes in the future. So I'm trying. I'm really trying to teach them how to eat healthy and not to like the processed food.
Yeah, and it's hard.
It's kind of disgusting.
Yeah, processed it really is. and it's hard coming from. So my family medicine I did up in New York, and I'm just trying to think back. People hear diabetes, they don't quite understand the scope of it, especially if you're if your background is farming and. You might have had a family member that had it. Maybe they didn't know. Who knows? And people don't really go to the doctors. And they come to you and you say, all right, you have diabetes. I'm looking at your numbers here, and this is what we have to do. A, it can be overwhelming. B, it can be, it's more A than B, but the overwhelming part, people, I don't want to start taking medicines. I don't want to start watching what I'm eating. This is what my family does. My great-grandfather died at 102, and he did this. And it's like, well, your grandfather was an outlier. If you want to do well, you know, you'll listen to what I have
and he
to
was
say
probably here. Working in the field the whole day. So his level of exercise, you know, he probably didn't even have diabetes. I mean, what would they know?
Yeah. And then the unfortunate aspect of it too in medicine is that a lot of physicians will use diabetes as kind of a, I don't want to say a gotcha tool, but yeah, sort of like, you know, if you don't do this, you're going to get diabetes. You are going to have to be on a needle. And it's not approached in the right way.
Right.
To actually sit down with your patient, because it takes time. And I'm glad as a PA, I can sit down and I have the time to say, you know, this is what diabetes is. This is what we have another thing called metabolic syndrome, which entails kind of a pre-diabetic, high blood pressure, high cholesterol state, which there's a lot of people in at this point in time. We can sit down, we can discuss with them and take the time and say, you know, this is what it is and this is what you have to do. And you can't change, you know, and you'll see people do it. They want to change their lifestyle in, you know, 2 months. But, you know, you're 55 years old. Yes. It took you 55 years to get to where you are. And
to
it's going to take
your levels of blood sugar. Yes.
It's going to be hard. So historically, again, U.S. perspective, and I'm just going to go back to when we were agrarian, because what did you say? You're an
agronomist or agricultural engineer.
Okay.
That's my first love.
So this will be right up your alley then. So let's take the American frontier. Not even that. Let's just say American society. We'll say just prior to World War One, maybe right after the Civil War, we had. And I'm terrible. I studied history. That was my undergrad, but it was modern European.
All right.
But the Industrial Revolution was right around the Civil War, if I remember correctly, and from that point beyond, you know, trains, transportation, these are huge steps, especially in an agrarian society. You can transport things.
Right.
You have communication. You can. So, but regardless, you had people that lived in small towns, mostly on farms. They grew their own livestock. they had a stake in their food, mm-hmm. right? They had to wake up early. They had to put
they
the time in.
They had a commitment to mm-hmm. produce in their
or they starve.
Yes, yes, exactly.
And they had to have the knowledge. If they mm-hmm. didn't have the knowledge again, they would starve. So that wasn't anything special. That was just how people survived. Correct. Everyone was a farmer, or let's say you were a blacksmith. You had to know about
or you were a merchant.
Mm-hmm. But and you could be in the city, and mm-hmm. but even in the cities, the food was coming from the local farms. The meats were cut. You go to the butcher, and the butcher didn't bring this stuff in from California or Argentina, or this stuff came in from local. Then you had World War I, where we really got mechanized. You had the explosion of the Industrial Revolution. I mean, we had these cities jumping up, cities that were there like New York, but now we're talking major skyscrapers are mm-hmm. coming after that. U.S. came out as an industrial superpower. The ability to move further from the cities or move to the cities for industrial jobs. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I think we started seeing just a little bit of a loss of our hands.
A detachment, yes, mm-hmm. to the agriculture.
We moved to World War II, and now you've got all the husbands, all the men left. I mean, I don't remember how many served, but it was a lot. Mm-hmm. Millions of Americans were all of a sudden overseas. The wives were at home. They were filling the jobs in the plants, mm-hmm. and they were raising their children.
Right.
And now, what do? You don't have the you don't have the time to farm. You don't have the time for all that. And you also have the companies that shipped foods overseas. And they said, "Hey, wait a minute. We can preserve this stuff. We can mass produce this stuff.
Yes.
We can send it out. You can sustain your families on it, and still get the job done."
Yes.
GIs came home. That's the American term for servicemen. So yes. GIs came home. They went back to work. The company said, well, we still want to make this stuff, so let's start branding it, and boom, now you have your...
They had the industrial infrastructure to do so, mm-hmm. absolutely.
And then from then on, I mean, it became the standard versus the new. The standard was to buy your processed foods, make them for your family, get them fed, get them out the door, and work, work, work. People moved to these things, what we call Levitt towns, mm-hmm. which is similar to what we have here, but small houses... Boom, 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 row houses, mm-hmm. just one right after the other. They're all across the Midwest. Those were far away from farms. They were mm-hmm. far away from the butchers. It really separated folks from their food.
Right.
And then went to where we are today.
Yes, and also I was watching some old commercials and the way they used to market these products, these, you know, processed foods. And you could see that they absolutely market these processed foods as a symbol of a status. If you could access and buy all these different processed foods, canned products, you know, processed vegetables, you didn't have to, you know, slave yourself washing the vegetables
right.
and cooking them yourself and prepping them. You made it.
Mm-hmm. You could afford it.
Yeah, you could afford it. You were, you know, you were in a good position. So it's sad, you know, when that shift on paradigm occurred for the American society, it was sad because it really did a lot of harm. So mm-hmm. we have now over 60 years of history of the United States consuming processed foods.
Right, it's become the norm. Mm-hmm. And you see it, one of the microcosms of it, you look at breastfeeding, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
our grandparents and our parents, that generation was like, why breastfeed? And you have mm-hmm. you have all this formula. Use
exactly,
formula.
Yes.
It's so much easier. You can go out and work. You can do this. Yeah. And there's this separation from it.
Yes.
And I think recently we're getting back into it. There's a big push for it because we know it's healthier. I mean, mm-hmm. it's obviously healthier. It's how we're designed.
Yes, absolutely. But yes, I've seen it. I don't, you know, one of the, you know, closest experiences for me is to see how sometimes my in-laws react to things that I do. And
in-laws, parents.
No, but for me it's even more shocking because it's not only a, you know, a age barrier or a mm-hmm. generational barrier, but it's also a cultural barrier
sure.
between us and something that, you know, we all have to overcome. And my dad-in-law, for instance, he won't eat a lot of fresh stuff, but he will eat anything from a can.
Any chance that they're going to listen to this?
We all know this. We all give him a hard time about it. This is a fact. This is a well-known fact. And you know, he'll eat the cranberry sauce. I mean, like we you know, we made this like fresh, beautiful cranberry sauce for Thanksgiving, and he brings the can to the table. I mean, like, for me, it's unbelievable.
That's my dog hacking in the background. Yeah. He's got a smoker's cough. I don't know if you can hear it, but yeah, it's, he wakes us up with that. Yeah, it's just, it's, and you hope that the shift happens. You hope that with this generation, the shift happens. And I think we're starting to see.
We have to find a strong motivating factor, something that is visual. I think the way to revert this is like really by bringing the fresh foods in the table and exposing things, exposing people to things that they are missing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you put a fresh, beautiful tomato in front of somebody. I mean, I could not believe that they wouldn't be tempted, you know, to bite it.
Right. Well, you don't even know though. Today you can buy a fresh, beautiful tomato that's had, what gas is that? They put a gas in it to keep it red.
You know, make it mature, to make it ripen.
And it's hard. And I'd like to talk about modified foods here in a minute, but we won't get into that yet.
Okay.
To go back to that, this has been my current theme, is to always forget the train of thought.
We were talking about the paradigm shift, that we are hoping that will occur and that we will go back to our roots of eating.
Did you see the episode of, and I wish I remember what the Jamie Oliver show was. Maybe it was, I don't remember what the name of it was, but there was an episode where they took children in and they showed them all these parts of chicken, and it was just the leftover parts. It was like just the junk skin and whatever. And he's showing them, would you eat this? No. Would you eat this? No. And then he mixes a chemical with it, because they mix it with chemicals like, I want to say an ammonia based chemical to kill the bacteria, to basically strip it of any sort of microbes. Then they spun it in a centrifuge. They got, and it turned into this kind of goo. Yeah, it really was a good, and all the kids are grossed out. And then he shaped it into a chicken nugget, breaded it, and cooked it. And the kids saw the whole process. And then at the end, he was thinking, you know, and who wants this? And he thought they would say, no. And they were like, they all raised their hands. Yeah, I'll have one of those.
God,
I'll eat one. It's
amazing.
I didn't
see that episode. Oh,
yeah. And sad. You know, it's just, that's the conditioning. Mm-hmm. You know, you see McDonald's, you see that, and it's delicious. McDonald's is delicious. I'm not going to lie to you.
Oh, the fries? The fries are
it's freaking great.
I know. But you flip the box and you see 550 calories.
Yeah.
I mean,
just sodium.
It makes you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that's a fourth of what you're supposed to eat a day if you're an active person.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
and to consider activity is a hard thing. When I go through my patients and I tell them about, you know, where you have to be as far as a sedentary lifestyle, active or moderately active to active, even if they're walking half hour a day, they're still in that sedentary because they sit for 8 hours a day at your desk. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, an average person, you're talking maybe 2,000 calories sedentary or maybe 2,000 moderate. You eat, and some people just don't. They just don't count. So, you know, they're putting away 2,400 calories for lunch and wondering why, you know, they're 240 pounds. And it's a sad thing. We're also seeing, you know, since that whole shift from
eating fresh foods.
Yeah. And having your farm, or even hunting. Hunting used to be this widely accepted thing. People just went hunting. My dad grew up, he gave me a shotgun when I was 12 years old, a single shot shotgun. And he used to go out and hunt rabbits and bring them home. And that's just what they did. And he had a connection with what he was eating. It was, you know, we put emotion behind it, and it's fine if that's there. I mean, but again, and most people I know don't hunt. You know, we've completely separated. You go out and you hunt, the food is free range. Mm-hmm. It's organic. It depends on what it's eating.
Yeah. It depends on what you're hunting and where you're hunting.
That's true. But I mean, if you consider you know, most of it's grass fed. Yes. If you're eating deer, it's grass fed. Mm-hmm. And you know, it may not be as tasty as a McDonald's cheeseburger, but it's healthy. It's
Kevin,
healthier.
I'm looking at you like with bewildered eyes now.
What
are you talking about? I mean, like, any, you know, game food is just, a game is just so much tastier. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, you find it tastier?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, see, there.
And that's the other thing. I mean, like, you taste, I don't know, different types of meat, like beef or deer, and like, they all have their own complexity, and you can I don't know. I always imagine what would I cook them with and what would I pair them with. And
well, that's like, probably why it was more important, right? Mm-hmm. I would imagine why our great grandparents used to. My grandmother to this day, she's 90, and she'll say, "Oh, you just add a little bit of this spice or that spice." I don't know what the hell these spices are. I don't use them. I don't need them.
Right.
And I suppose in those days, when my dad would carry home a rabbit, you'd have to know what spices.
What goes best? Yeah. With it. Yes. And it's funny because actually, you know, like the story of using spices doesn't come as a flavor enhancement. It was used to preserve the food, you know, like curries. And a lot of these different spices have antibiotic properties. So they did actually prevent your food from rotting.
Sure. Well, I mean, salting your food, right?
Salting was the other technique, you know, to prevent the food from rotting, especially meats and so on. And you know, you would make them travel, you would make them last. But any case, you know, I didn't hunt when I was a kid, but I did go to carneos, we call them in Argentina. So basically you slaughter an animal and then you process the whole animal. Nothing goes to waste. Nothing.
So like a make your own pizza type of place, but you go and you kill your own animal?
No, I mean, no. No.
I'll take that cow and let's start.
A little bit like that, but not so much. No. Okay. Basically, we had friends that had a farm or, you know, or a not even. Sometimes you just go buy an animal, you bring him to, you know, your country house, you kill the animal, and you process it. I mean, you make sausages, you have a big asado while you're making all these. Well, you just use everything, everything, everything.
There's people that have a big disdain about killing their own animals, and I understand it. I understand it.
It's hard.
Right, yeah. Yes. But if you're buying a chicken from Walmart, you're killing it. You're just a step away from it. It doesn't have feathers. It's just this lump of pink. Yes. We even took the bones out of it now. You don't even have to get it with bones.
You know? Because it's hard to kill an animal, I think that even if you like meat, you won't eat as often because you know how much it costs to kill the animal. You know how much it costs to process the animal and how much work it took. So you'll space out your meat consumption. That's basically what happens. You are more aware of how much work goes into a sausage or a salami, you know, like,
which is probably why there were foods like haggis. I don't know if you're familiar with haggis. Foods made with the entrails of the animals.
Which I probably would love. blood and sausage and things like that.
Yeah. Yes. Well, it keeps, you know, we hear about it now. We're like tongue sandwich.
Oh, that's delicious.
My grandmother would eat brains of the cow. I mean, again, there's the shift. I mean, at one point it was the norm. And
yeah, because you wouldn't let anything go to waste. It was way too costly to raise an animal to make it, you know, fat and plump and ready to be eaten. And so you were aware how much it took, how much it cost. And I think that that's also part of what happened. There was, you get this, you know, you desensitize yourself. When you come to States, I mean, everything is so cheap, so affordable, so accessible. You can go to the store 24 hours a day. You can eat any time of the day or night. I mean, there's no boundary to what you can access to. And yes, that makes it more, you know, you have to really have self-control there.
So go, I interrupted you, but so what was the name of that where you got the
slaughter animal?
Carneo. And what is that? Is that a verb or what is that?
No, that's kind of a feast, you know, carneo, where you it'll be the slaughter. But it just
so it's awful. A specific meal that you're talking about? Was it a celebration meal? Or a
specific event.
Okay.
So you would gather some friends and you get one animal or two or three, depending. I mean, like a cow and a pig and maybe some lamb, you know, whatever is, it also depends on where you are at in Argentina, what is the most common type of production. So cow and pork are a very common combination. Our sausage, for instance, our salchicha, chorizo parrillero, is different from, you know, the States. You mix a ratio of beef to pork and you make the sausage. So there's a lot of different things you would do when you had this feast.
Yeah.
But it was great. And it was about, you know, company. It was about friendship and camaraderie.
And you're also passing stuff on to your kids. You're passing the how-to.
The habits, exactly. The preparation, the recipes, the traditions. I mean...
Oh, I didn't know if that was... No, it's no big deal. It's all right. Remember, this is podcast four. Okay. We can drop things and make noises. My dog is snoring and coughing in the background, so it's not a big deal. I'm just looking at some of my notes here. So I had some questions for you about would you hunt your own food, and I know what that answer is. And I know you would slaughter your own food. And I guess the term that I was thinking of is if we anesthetized, I can never say that word.
Anesthetized?
I'm in medicine. I just say, yeah.
Anesthetized? Put an anesthesia?
Say it.
Anesthetized?
Anesthetized.
Anesthetized?
If I tell my patients that I have
to... I have an accent.
Yeah, I know. There's certain words, it's a thing. Yeah. I can't count straight lines. It sounds bizarre, but if you were to put three straight lines, like three letter I's, it's a bloop in my head. Everyone's got weird things, just wiring stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, and some words you just can't say.
Next time I have a date with you, I'll put in a Roman number.
I won't be able to count it. It looks like a mush to me. It's the weirdest thing. Same thing with anesthesia.
Yes. There's humane ways to slaughter an animal.
We anesthetize the whole this whole generation against it. Our food doesn't even look like, and I think I started going into this, our food doesn't even look like what it used to look
correct.
Like. It's not a chicken hanging in a window. It's a lump of meat without even bones. There's no bones on it. It's completely, it just doesn't look like what it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only, I think that just... It, compounds the problem.
Yes, but it's like with everything. I mean, mm-hmm. when I see the United States is extremely wasteful mm-hmm. in everything. I mean, everything. It's just there's people that do not recycle, that there's people that every day are throwing food away. I mean, it kills me when I see people throwing food away, any kind of food, you know, just even processed food. I mean, because how much cost?
And you look at starving people in the Darfur and stuff, and it's, you know, but what do you do about it? It's one of those weird things. We have so much abundance here, which we're saying, you know, we can see in the levels of obesity and diabetes and stuff.
Right.
I
think it just all goes back to the same problem. People are desensitized as far as how much it costs to produce anything,
mm-hmm.
you know, to grow a tomato, to grow a head of lettuce, to bring it to your supermarket and just have it fresh and plump and, you know, ready for your eyes, or how much it costs to make a burger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's...
cost much now.
McDonald's
has their own cows that they like to use. Watch, what was it, Food Inc.?
Yes. But moreover, I mean, like, there's a lot of subsidies going into certain types of agriculture, mm-hmm. like, or meat production. So mm-hmm. that's why it is not so expensive relative to other types of foods that are not subsidized by the government.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that gets into a completely different discussion. But if... What I'm going with is, like, if people were more aware of how much it costs, you know, to the country's economy, to the environment, to produce a certain item, they would be more careful as far as what they are going to do with it, mm-hmm. how they are going to use it or eat it, or, you know, how are they going to dispose of it as well.
Well, we're such a... I was just going to say society isn't small communities anymore. And you're not going to see that. If a small community, it used to be that you moved to where you felt held your values, held your beliefs, and that's whether it's religious, food, political.
Mm-hmm.
And that became the basis of really the country, because America is 50 separate states, and those 50 separate states are filled by... 51? No, it's 50. It's Puerto Rico is a we have a bunch of little areas there, but it's 50.
50? Yeah. Oh my God.
Don't worry, it's only on the radio for it's okay. You're not a native, it's fine.
I just took my exam not long ago.
Can you name them all? Go. No, 50 separate states.
Okay.
Of those states, they're separate counties. Of those counties, they're separate towns. And it used to be very separate. If you had something like a regulation about importing meats or types of vegetables or what you can do with your farms or anything, you felt it. You felt it because you had a stake in your community.
Absolutely.
Now it's those little small, they're there, but it's not as important. I mean, I can go on my phone and be connected to instantly video FaceTime with someone in California. I mean, our society has just exploded as far as that goes. And, you know, basically what I'm getting at is little things like being wasteful. Mm-hmm. You don't feel it, especially in your towns and your communities, than you would 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a problem. I don't know. And is there an answer? I mean, you got me. You can look at old movies. I'm thinking specifically Christmas Story, where did you ever see that? You'll shoot your eye out.
I don't know. I get them all confused. All
okay, so this is the one where the little boy has a BB gun and they're worried that he's going to shoot his
eye out.
And
he puts the tongue in the frozen ball. Yes, I saw that one.
And she's saying to the little boy who's not eating, there's people starving in China.
Yes.
So
I always tell that to my kids. Mm-hmm. Like, they are so lucky that they have a full plate of food in
exactly,
front of their faces.
Exactly. Yes. And so that's been, people have been aware of that. Mm-hmm. It's just, what do you do? What do you do about it? I mean, we have so much abundance here. The only thing that's going to change that is if we had some sort of derailment of our transportation system, refrigerated vans, refrigerated rail cars, cargo planes.
An economic crisis, a real one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an economic crisis where they called the last one the Great Recession.
Yes, right.
A lot
Coming
of people
from Argentina, that was like the biggest joke.
Yeah. Isn't Argentina where... It might have been where, I don't know when it was, maybe the 80s, where inflation went
$1, absolutely.
And then like people were getting paid twice a day because the money was worth more.
It was terrible. I mean, the 80s were terrible. You had shortages of all kinds of foods. Mm-hmm. You would go to the store and they didn't have it. And sometimes what happened as well is like the store owner wanted to keep the product until they knew what price they should assign to it.
Okay.
And then what happens, like the government, in another instance, the government started regulating the prices at which certain products should be sold, like milk. So they had to publish, and you know, the storefront, they had to publish the official list price that would be released every morning. So milk has a certain price. And of course, it was like black market.
Yeah, yeah.
Like people that, yeah, it was terrible. It was terrible. And you wouldn't be able to find milk sometimes or sugar, bread, like the staples, the most eggs. I mean, yeah. all the basics.
And the catalyst to that can be anything. I mean, when you're talking a smaller country with smaller GDP, not the same infrastructure as the US, obviously, something a lot smaller can set that off. Mm-hmm. The US, I mean, maybe if there was another oil crisis, if there was...
Yeah, but there's so many interests created around the world and on, you know, the US economy as consumers, that I think they'll end up helping you not to collapse because they need you.
Yeah.
They need US to consume all their Chinese products. You know? Like, where would the Chinese industry go if the United States economy collapses?
Yeah. And it's true. I mean, they're if not the next great superpower, they're coming up pretty quickly, China.
Well, we're going in a tangent here.
We are. That's fine, though. That's what we can do. That's the wait, what if? Wait,
I'm
what
gonna,
if
I'm gonna
the Chinese government... Okay, we'll come back on the side. Food. Let me look through some of my notes, see what I got here. So I want to go into... And this could be a whole other conversation. Let's talk about... I wanted to go into GMOs. We can do that another day. There's going to be a lot to talk about GMOs.
I just wanted to say that the one reason I think that why I don't like processed foods is like at home we never had them really because they are so expensive. In Argentina, the subsidies for agriculture are you know, nil. Mm-hmm. And so everything costs as it costs to produce it. Mm-hmm. And everything, every cost translates into, you know, the manufactured products that are originated, they are created from those particular agricultural products. So, like you were talking about, like chicken fingers, or yeah. I mean, like those were so expensive.
Really?
Like having those is like a treat, you
just
know,
it's frozen,
like,
flash
yes,
fried.
Like if you were to your grandma's house and mm-hmm. you know she had them for you, wow, that was a big thing, you know.
Really? Just,
see, that stuff didn't exist. I mean, I think the most processed food that probably I consumed while I was growing up was the bouillon. You know, mm-hmm. the little squares. And you know, my mom sometimes, not all the time, added them to a soup just to give them an extra kick because mm-hmm. maybe it didn't have so much meat or so much chicken in it. It was just more veggie-based.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just, it was so different when I came here. I'm just, and that's what, one of the reasons why I started cooking so much, because mm-hmm. I missed my food so terribly. Yeah. Everything was disgusting. I mean,
it's where do you find the time? That's the one thing that I can't figure out. Where my grandparents, where my parents, well, no, my parents were a product of the processed food generation, but it's, and I think that's where it's going to be hard to get people to consider whole foods again. I mean, it takes a long time, doesn't it?
It's a lot of planning and organization. Mm-hmm. Again, like anything else, it's yes, it takes more time certainly than opening a can and pouring it over, you know, I don't know, spaghetti, you know, yeah. like you buy the spaghetti sauce, or like, I don't know how far you go, like you buy the SpaghettiOs.
Yeah. Well, if you try to cut out processed foods, you realize it's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Yes.
The spaghetti is dried, processed. Yes. The sauce, you're right. The bread, we don't do anything. You
know, like the bread, for instance, so that happened to me as well. And I was so mad. So I get to the U.S., and I would eat the same. I would eat at home. I would have breakfast with a slice of bread and my yogurt and, you know, a glass of milk, you know, coffee and milk. And so, you know, I would still bike to school. So I was still active. I would go to the gym and I start putting on weight mm-hmm. and I couldn't figure it out. I mean, like I put like 10 pounds on just mm-hmm. like that in months, you know, like 2 months perhaps. And then I started being really careful and reading. I mean, like these were things that I didn't do back home. I started reading the labels and yeah. and really counting the calories. So I see sugar, you know, like what everybody says,
it's
sugar
everywhere.
Coming up as, you know, first ingredient. The yogurt is disgusting. I mean, like so sugary, and it has gelatin and this and that. I mean, yeah. it's so far from what a real yogurt should be like. Is
have your taste buds, do they alter now if you
well,
go back
I started
to
dropping foods. Like I would buy the plain yogurt mm-hmm. and then I would put, you know, my mashed fruit on it and mm-hmm. that would be my flavoring. I stopped buying the yogurt, you know, the flavored yogurts, like
yeah
done. The bread was a difficult thing, but then, you know, you change brands. I Adam, you know, my current husband. hold on, that sounded like my one husband.
Your what husband? Your only living husband? What? You're currently
living. My current husband, not my one husband. My.
It's okay. It's lost in translation. We got
yes,
it.
Yes, that's really it. But no, we, you know, and a friend of mine, Lori, you know, she was into eating, she was vegetarian going into vegan, or she was trying to, you know, become vegan. Mm-hmm. She introduced me to Whole Foods, and then I started buying better bread and things like that. And then I started cooking like crazy and making my own bread and, you mm-hmm. know, went back to what I used to do in Argentina, and that worked out, and, you know, yeah. the weight came off.
Really?
It's like, the funny thing is, like, every time I went back home, I mean, with between the walking and eating healthy, I mean, like, I would go on vacation, I would lose weight.
Yeah.
I mean, to how many people that, you know, happens? Only if you live in the United States and you go to another country, you can lose weight while you're on vacation.
What's amazing you bring up is the refined sugar that's in everything.
Everything.
Just pump it into everything.
Yeah, and it's, you know what is funny? My mom comes to visit here and I give her the bread, you know, like from the store, you know, kind of the healthier ones, mm-hmm. you know, like the whole wheat, and she eats a slice. And she says, like, oh, my God, this is like pan dulce, what we call the panettone in Argentina because it has so much sugar. I mean, that's a bread that you eat for Christmas.
That's what I heard about. I heard that American bread tastes very sweet.
It's super sweet.
Is it really? It's,
any, you know, white bread, whole wheat bread, the whole wheat breads, I think, like they really mess it up because they try to sell you the idea that these are healthy breads because they have a higher fiber content. But in order to make them more palatable for people, they add so much sugar to it that they end up offsetting the, you know, the positive aspect of it.
Our bodies aren't designed for that at all. We you know, we're really functioning on 100,000-year-old models. There's no difference. I mean, all right, 100,000 years, we have a few differences. We might not be as hairy. Some of us might not be as hairy.
But we have a smaller pinky toe, right?
Is that what it is? I don't know. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. So. And there's a, actually, what the funny thing is, if you do a genetic outline of somebody, if you do a genetic DNA analysis, I can't remember what the percentage of is, but most people have a little bit of Neanderthal in them. And there's,
yes.
But, you know, or let's just narrow it down then. Let's say in the last 30,000 years, we haven't changed much. And yet our diets have changed so drastically in the last 100 years. And our bodies just aren't prepared for it. I mean, diabetes, it's remarkable that there's not worse things because there's no way in nature you're going to find refined sugar. You're going to find your apples, which are, they're sugars, but they're longer chains. So the reason why an apple isn't as sweet as a tablespoon of sugar is because you have a small, tiny chain of sugars, which are easy to process. Consider it like pouring alcohol on a fire, or a gasoline, versus a piece of wood.
It's percentages and all the other things that you're eating that aren't sugar that are nutritional.
Polysaccharides, monosaccharides, and you're breaking down. The body's meant to take in these polysaccharides, these really long sugars, break them down. And then that's why when you, and we have the enzymes for it, you take a cracker, you put it in your mouth, it starts tasting sweet because your body is taking those fibers and breaking them down into sugar. But we're just not prepared for, you know, a Coca-Cola. Oh. Some people drink four or five a day. That's sugar water and you're pumping it into your veins and that sugar is literally abrasive within your arteries.
Yes.
It causes all sorts of inflammation throughout the body. And then there's, you could get your doctorate in just studying the effects of glucose on the human diet, the human body. I mean, I don't know the correlation with cancers. I'm sure it's there. The correlation with heart disease, the correlation with stroke, the correlation with, I mean, it's all there.
Yes, it's so funny you mentioned that because in Argentina, they had to like almost do a campaign for people to eat a little bit of sugar. I mean, Argentine culture is funny in a way because, you know, or perhaps I was more aware because I was a young woman there growing up, a teenager. And so you're aware of your body shape, you know, if you're thin, if you're fat, if, you know, and you know, people are constantly dieting, or they were constantly dieting, or, you know, it seems so when I was a teenager.
That's the way it is here.
No, but really dieting. I mean, like,
what's the difference?
Like when people are really dieting, they eat less, they really watch their calories.
Now
like
they want to take pills.
Here, a lot of people say they are dieting, but I don't see them making the change to, like, you know, like what we're talking about.
Yeah. And it's,
I mean,
it's,
like, I mean, we have a lot of eating disorders in Argentina, really, and we've had them for many years. And I don't know how it's now because I don't live there, but there was a lot of people that were anorexic or bulimic. And I'll tell you, like, to the extent that this was in kind of ingrained in the society, like you would go to buy clothes. And so if you wanted to buy a certain brand of clothes, they would only make three sizes. Like 1, 2, and 3. And then I think the 3 wouldn't even be as small in the US.
Okay.
So that's how big the clothes were.
Right.
I mean, so they would make like tiny clothes. So if you didn't fit on those clothes, you had to buy clothes that you know, grandma's store.
Yeah.
And so if you were a teenager, if you didn't fit on those clothes, you really had to work hard to fit on those clothes. I mean, I guess the other extreme, right?
So you're just saying, is the answer just have only size 6 and smaller the United States?
No.
I don't know women's clothing too well, but...
No, by no means. I mean, like, that was unhealthy in the other way. It was putting way too much pressure. They actually had to pass a law for clothing companies to make bigger sizes, you know, like to have more than 3
really
teeny tiny sizes. I mean, like I would go to buy clothes. I mean, if I were now, maybe I get some clothes. But if I were, you know, to buy clothes when I was a teenager, I would be an extra large, and some brands I wouldn't even fit in. And I come to the States and I'm an extra small or a small size.
Yeah.
The same person. So,
yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that happens. But in any case, they had to make a campaign, you know, to help people, you know, reconcile with eating sugar because people were eating, you know, just all the foods with artificial sweeteners and so on. And so they were saying, like, how, you know, a teaspoon of sugar in your coffee in the morning, you know, helps your brain, you know, fire up. Because, yes, I mean, like, glucose is the ultimate brain food.
It's the only thing. Well, I mean, you can use other methods, but then you lead to diabetics have ketoacidosis, or they're not. I mean, yeah, you need sugar. You need carbohydrates.
You need sugar.
That's the only reason why it's going to work.
But people weren't eating sugar. So it was just the other opposite, you know.
Yeah.
The complete opposite. Not healthy either. I'm not, you know, suggesting that by any means that would be a solution, but it just was a contrast to me, a huge contrast.
So, and that's I guess society who tries to answer the question. And, you know, I don't know what the answer is. I think what you're doing is one of the right ways to go about it, by teaching your kids, having them see you do it, giving them the skills. And maybe that's what we have to do as a society, start doing that. Education within the school systems. It pains me as a, and I don't know if this translates well to an Argentinian, but as a libertarian, it pains me to say the government needs to start teaching our kids. I think it belongs in the household, but I mean, sometimes you need that. Mm-hmm. You take this whole concept of food deserts. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yes, I'm familiar with it.
And I guess it does make sense in a way. I mean, you have areas where the only available food is from like a local tienda or a
Mercadito or 7-Eleven.
And it's not good foods. It's all processed and it's all... And if we start seeing those health food deserts, as we call it, change, if we see the price shift where it becomes cheaper to buy, you know, produce, fresh produce, then, you know, maybe we'll start seeing a change of that.
Well, yeah, it's just the price of processed foods. I mean, like, you see it. I mean, people are gonna, you know, you see what are these, the Twinkies and all these things.
And that's the problem. They're so good, so delicious.
They're so gross.
It's the bane of my existence.
They are so gross, Kevin.
You get a sweet tooth. It's a genetic thing. Oh gosh.
I have a sweet tooth.
I really have
a huge sweet tooth. I love sweets. I mean, like, I love hard candy. I mean, like,
I'm not into that. I like if it's baked and has chocolate in it. I'm like an alcoholic.
So how are you
my
going
wife can't
for
have it in
a Twinkie
the house.
Then?
Oh, just because it's delicious. It's cakey. It's cakey with sugar in the middle. I mean, it's like the perfect food.
Yeah, I
it doesn't go bad. It's genetically we go for
that,
it.
Okay, hold on.
Sure.
Doesn't that scare you? I mean, like that food
doesn't
absolutely. Go bad.
I haven't eaten a Twinkie in probably 30 years.
Okay, just to congratulations for that.
I eat actually very good. It's the sweets, you know. The worst thing is when Christmas comes around. Oh, I just love eating. Oh, food is so good.
Food
and
is so good.
Hard.
I mean, I totally agree with you. But, I mean, I love eating food, but...
And maybe it's because of where I work and everything. I don't eat McDonald's. I don't eat fast food. If we go, because we take our kids as a treat every now and then. You know, it's salads and stuff. And it's miserable. Eating healthy is miserable, I think, personally. Oh, it is. Because you're like, oh, I gotta just eat a salad. You don't want a salad. You don't want a baked chicken. You want to get the good stuff.
Look at you saying, you see like how you have an ingrain? Even you said like you want to get the good stuff.
Well, did you see... I think it was Food Inc. or was the one where the guy ate McDonald's every day for 30 days. Supersize me.
No, Supersize It. Yes.
But I was talking about. Yeah, well, they have the playgrounds at the McDonald's to entice children to come and say, oh, right. They do the association,
and the happy
fun,
meal,
happy, and yeah,
yes,
and food.
Absolutely. Yes.
And, you know, it's happened. It worked because I crave it.
Yes.
One of the best things is a Wendy's. I don't remember what it was. Again, I haven't eaten this stuff in years, a decade at least. A Wendy's, I don't even know what it was, but it was just a burger. I mean, it had everything on it. So good.
The square burger, right?
Yeah, they're square.
So unnatural. Oh,
yeah. Square burger. Like a round burger's natural? A big mush of...
I guess it's like, it's a, you know, a more natural shape of food. I mean, a slice of tomato is round.
Oh yeah, okay.
You know, just, you know, like a, it's, you don't have any squares in
typical things.
A starfruit has, you know, the sharp angles, but you know,
I never had a starfruit.
Exactly. Who eats a starfruit? Yeah. Like they are not very common.
The typical things that we eat that we just become accustomed to, when you think about them, it sounds awful, like meatball. Right? Meatball. I love meatballs. Meatballs are great. My mom makes great meatballs.
Yes.
She's Italian. Meatballs are wonderful. But when you think about it, if we didn't say meatball at least, I don't know, once or twice a week, our entire lives, and you were just saying meatball, a ball of meat, that's not, or meatloaf, and you heard that, you'd be like, what the hell is this person eating? Meatloaf? But it's so good.
I know. It's great. But you have to think where those foods came from too. I mean, like they, you know, they had a little bit of meat and they have all bread, and then you put the all bread with the good meat and you cooked it in a sauce and it would be delicious. And they put some veggies and extra flavors. I think that now, you know, the concept has gotten so degenerated, you know, that maybe a meatball or a meatloaf doesn't have anything to do with what your grandma prepared.
Yeah.
You know,
no.
Just like nothing at all.
All right. It's a Sunday night. Might as well start wrapping this up, but did you enjoy it?
Yes, I did. I don't know if we arrive at a conclusion. I think that we're a little bit
inconclusive. Just a word.
It's just a chat.
And what these podcasts are doing, we're just, you know, I didn't get to use any of these cool things. I don't know if you heard them where we did. That's my suspense. When Adam was here and he was, there was no, like, we were, you know, trying to make jokes with each other and the joke would flop, would just play this.
Okay.
That's the idea. No one's even paying attention. Or this. The one person clap.
Okay.
We didn't get to use any of these. But you know, we're I'm just figuring it out. We're catering the podcast. The last 2 weeks have been pretty serious, and I hope to get Moses, and if you're listening, Moses, I know you are, we can get you back on, get Adam back on, try to lighten the mood a little bit.
Was this too serious?
No. I think we had fun.
Okay.
It was just, what I'm saying is the basis
the tone,
of the, yeah, I'm
the
not sure where this is going. And maybe I'll just do it like this. Each week will be something completely different. And I think that works, but I definitely want to have you back because we got to talk GMOs. I need to know more about those genetically modified organisms.
Correct.
They're actually patenting life. I mean, how creepy
isn't
that?
It's just tremendous.
And it's, when are they going to start?
Tremendously scary.
Yeah. Yeah. And, there's some things, you know, you read about it and you're like, well, okay, it makes sense. It doesn't seem to be that bad. And then you think about, so basically you're splicing parts, you know, you could literally take part of DNA of one plant, put it in another just to get that
right. Benefit. That doesn't scare me. And we're not going to get too much into the conversation, but that doesn't scare me because genetic transfer has always occurred. I mean, in actuality, I mean, like we do have genetic fragments that are not inherent to our species that we have acquired throughout our evolution. So that's not the scary part. The rate at which occurs or the extent at which occurs, that's a different discussion. But moreover, I think the problem is patenting life. That's where it gets really scary to me. It's like the concept behind it. Maybe because I'm biased. I love technology. I love what we can achieve with technology. So genetically modifying a plant to be a better performer, that doesn't scare me. That I think is helpful. But
I mean, it's just the whole concept of taking 50, 100, a million years of nature and doing it in 5 minutes in the lab.
Yes.
I mean, like, it's bizarre.
But for me, I mean, like, the process is fascinating. I've always been fascinated.
You're a scientist. Of course, it's going to be fascinating. But you gotta, like, when you're doing it, you gotta just be like, this
is not right.
It's just not
right. A little voice on the back of your head saying, like, this is not right.
Because at what point do we start saying, I want a child, I want a girl with blue eyes, or I want a boy with blonde hair. I want a boy who's going to be 6 foot tall. And now everyone's going to be walking around looking the just way we, whatever.
The way we conceive beauty.
Mm-hmm. No. That's going to be creepy.
I mean, I just think that we have to, you know, again, self-control. Mm-hmm. And as a society, self-control, you know, is going to be the key. And just putting a limit to it. I mean, like, if you're saying, okay, we're going to engineer this plant, you know, like, suppose we found, you know, what if we found as a society a plant that would produce a compound to prevent cancers, any type of cancer, whichever. Wouldn't you engineer the plant to be the best producer, the most efficient to?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a totally valid, you know.
But where do you stop? I mean.
So let's limit it to plants.
Well, it's but it's like that for anything. I mean, we wonder why the Earth has, you know, so many nuclear weapons, or why, and we say, why don't we just pull back? Why don't we just stop doing this? But we can't. Once we start,
we're
humans. Yeah, and someone's going to be doing it in a lab somewhere. Someone right now could be cloning. There was that group, group that came out.
Somebody could be? I mean, somebody is cloning.
Yeah, well, I mean cloning humans,
yes,
though.
Yes, no.
You think?
Absolutely.
Have you seen Orphan Black yet?
No.
I told Adam to watch Orphan Black. It's a great show. It's this girl that finds other clones of herself. She finds that she's a clone. It's really good. All right. Well, let's wind it up.
Took a tangent again.
Yeah, we did. It's fine. All right. Well, thanks for coming on, and we'll do this again. Definitely.
You're very welcome.
That was the Wait What If podcast. Once again, this is April 19th, 2015. Tomorrow's my dad's birthday, so happy birthday to him.
Hold on. Today was my son's birthday. Joaquin.
Oh, is it really?
Yes, he's two now.
Oh, well, congratulations, Joaquin.
Thank you. 2 years old.
I'm
to mommy.
Oh, yes.
Of course.
When's your birthday?
No, 2 year anniversary.
Oh, but that's number two for you. Come on. Number one's really the most.
What are you talking about?
All right. Happy birthday, Joaquin. Wait, what if podcast? Let's see. What do we have new going on? Let me try to mix this, bring the card down a little bit. Hear me good. We have a Twitter account, WWI Podcast, which I started podcasting, or I started tweeting, and I ended up getting into an argument with somebody in California about this fight for 15 to get the bump to $15 an hour for minimum wage. And I'm like, I gotta not do this because I want people to enjoy my podcast and not argue politically with me. So I had to like, all right, let's readjust this. So
you're right.
We do have the WWI at WWI Podcast is our Twitter account. We're at podbean.podbean.com. It's Sunday. It's the end of a weekend. I have two kids that are 2 years old and under. I can't think straight. What else?
Excuses.
Hey, at least you have one of them that still isn't crap in their pants, okay? Well, although Maddie hasn't been. He's pretty much show changed.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, for like 6 months, so
nice.
I can't use that as an excuse either. Wait, what if podcast at yahoo.com is our email address. And thank you so much for listening. We've had like 300 listens. A good podcast, I bring this up every time, a good podcast has hundreds of thousands of listeners. We got about 300. That's okay. It's a place to start.
We're getting there.
We're getting there. One person at a time. But we're international. UK and Israel. Thanks, guys. Whoever's listening out there. And
hope you're listening this one, too.
That's right. And that'll be it. So till next time.